This is Santia Deck, and you're listening to MTMV Sports. Keep it locked.
You've been camping in your backyard, cycling in your living room. You've been enjoying rain showers in your bathroom, campfires on your TV screen. You've been counting stars and birds from your window and holding family cookouts in the kitchen. Now, get ready to go. Go on a real vacation. Take the wheel at your nearest RV dealer or at GoRV.com.
Hello, everybody. I'm Ed Robinson, and welcome to another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. On the program, I have Craig Loper. He is a sports reporter and anchor for the CBS affiliate WAFB-TV in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We're going to talk a little Southern University football, also LSU and New Orleans Saints. That's all coming up after the break. Stay tuned. You're listening to The Robinson Show.
People who are sick should stay home. You don't go to an emergency room. You don't go to a clinic. You get on the phone and you ask for advice and instructions from your physician. Then you use those instructions to determine what you're going to do. But the first reflex should not be, I feel sick, I'm going to go to an emergency room. I feel sick, I'm going to just go to a doctor's office. We need to physically separate. Ultimately, you may need, obviously, to see a physician or to go to a hospital. The first reflex should be to make a call to your physician.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. And now let's bring him on. He is the sports reporter for the sports reporter and anchor for the CBS affiliate WAFB-TV in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. We're going to talk a little Southern football, also LSU and New Orleans Saints as well. Let's welcome him to the program, Craig Loper. Hello, Craig. How's everything?
Hey, what's up, man? How you doing, man?
I'm doing pretty good, man. Thanks again for taking time out of your busy schedule to come along on the program. So let's jump right to it. Let's talk the 2020 Southern University football season. Now, Southern recently released its schedule, and it's a revised schedule. It's a reduced schedule. They're only going to be playing, for the moment, they're only going to be playing 9 games this year because we know about the current ongoing situation with the COVID-19 pandemic. So September the 5th was supposed to be the big Detroit Classic against Tennessee State. That game has been canceled. And then the game in September the 12th, which was against Florida A&M, that game was canceled as well. So Southern, for the moment, will start their season on September the 19th. We know about the COVID-19 pandemic and the current ongoing health situation. I want to ask you, Craig, are you optimistic that Southern will begin on September the 19th as planned, or do you think more changes will be made to the schedule?
You know, that's a great question, because here's where I'm at in this whole thing. The answer to your question is I really don't know. I don't know what to think, because this thing is such a fluid situation. I guess I'm naturally an optimist in terms of how I live my life. So, yes, I'm optimistic, but at the same time, the narrative and the things that I'm seeing and the things that I'm hearing from I have a couple coaches, coaching friends, one in college and one who spent time in the NFL. Now he's a head coach at the high school level. And what I'm hearing from them is, I don't know. They don't know. And if they don't know and how they're feeling, I kind of read, you know, get their reads off them. And I'm just like, this is fluid. It's such a fluid situation. So, yes, I have optimism, just because I think deep down, everyone wants the season to happen. But at the same time, with this fluid situation and second wave and just the logistics behind it and the resources, specifically, you know, at the SWAC level and testing and the personnel that everyone's got to be there, it seems like a very strong uphill battle. And we'll see what happens. So, who knows? The question is, I don't know. I do have optimism, and I hope they play Alabama A&M in Huntsville to open the season.
You mentioned a great point, Craig. Let's talk about testing. We know that recently, several NCAA Division I programs have had players and athletes that have tested for the COVID-19, including LSU, which we'll get to LSU in just a little bit. But as far as we've seen Division I schools that have aggressively tested their athletes for the COVID-19, and there have been some players that have tested positive. Do you know if anything of what Southern has done in terms of getting their athletes and aggressively testing them for the COVID-19? Have provisions been made for not just the football program, but for their athletic programs to try their best to combat this pandemic?
Yeah, well, so here's where Southern's at right now as an athletic department. Nobody's back together on campus yet. They're not like LSU. They didn't reconvene on June 9th. Southern's not scheduled to come back until July 8th or 9th, I believe. I can't remember if it's the 8th or the 9th. But they're not scheduled to come back until the 8th or the 9th. So they have a little bit more time, and they will have given themselves a little bit more time than the bigger, you know, SEC schools and stuff like that. And from my last conversation with Dawson Odoms, which was, I don't know, probably 3 weeks ago or something like that, and then everything, I talked to Roman Banks when the schedule revisions came out. And from the beginning, what they've told us is, you know, they're going to put every precaution in place that they can in terms of testing, in terms of social distancing. So obviously they don't have the sort of capacity and resources like a big SEC school would have, but in this situation, you know, they're working with health officials that are coming in to their facilities and teaching their athletic training staff how they need to do this, the logistics of it, which players can use this entrance, which players can use that entrance, what entrance the coaches can come in if that's a possibility. And so they're not just, you know, putting this together on a whim out there on their own. They're literally actually working with a lot of people down here from the Ochsner Hospital. I've been out at local high schools recently doing some stories, and there's staffers from Ochsner that are actually assigned to 2 to 3 high schools, and they will check those high schools, if not every day, every few days, to make sure that they are following every social distancing protocol that they can. And they're teaching the coaches how to administer, you know, these social distancing protocols, you know, taking people's temperatures, what to watch for, and ultimately, obviously, what to do. So I think the positive test that you saw out of LSU and Clemson and Texas and Alabama and stuff, all that stuff was inevitable. You know, everything we know about COVID, it's not if, it's when. And so now that it does happen in these big time schools, people realize, okay, look, it's going to happen. It's just a matter of how we respond to it and how we keep the numbers down, which I don't know if it's really truly possible, but they're going to try their hardest to make sure it is. So Southern will also take every, you know, protocol seriously when they get back to campus on July 8th or 9th for all their student athletes, and hopefully they can all come out of this relatively healthy as well.
Good to hear, Craig, that the university is being proactive and they're taking those steps to attempt to have a football season this year. Let's stay with the testing for a moment. We know Southern is in the SWAC, the Southwestern Athletic Conference, and then the powerhouse schools the powerhouse schools that you have in that conference. You have Grambling State University, you have Jackson State, you've got Alabama State. There's Texas Southern. There's also Alcorn. There's Prairie View, Arkansas Pine Bluff, and then you have Mississippi Valley. Are you aware of the other schools in the SWAC that are doing the same testing protocols as Southern in order to try their best to beat the pandemic and try to right. jump ahead of it before the football program returns on campus?
I'm not aware specifically of how the other schools do it. Obviously, here in Baton Rouge, I'm focused on Southern and kind of what they do. So I'm not aware of specifically what they're doing. I'd imagine it's, you know, it's the same thing at every university. They're probably working with their officials from a local hospital and you know, adhering to every guideline they can. I will say this, though, when it comes to – you mentioned Grambling. About 3-4 days ago, actually, it was Wednesday this past week, you know, the head coach, Broderick Frobbs, sent out a tweet and was pretty strong worded, just talking about, you know, basically – we don't need to be reconvening for workouts. He was kind of, in a way, I guess, criticizing all these, you know, these bigger schools that are back together, saying there's too many positive tests that are coming out and we don't need to be working out. If we care about the health and safety of these student athletes, then what are we doing? Pretty much, you know, he said, this is someone's child. We shouldn't be together for workouts. And he was pretty strong worded on that. And that tweet got a lot of attention, obviously, because he is a Division I football coach. And that's someone that took a hard stance on it and is standing behind his word. So that specifically kind of tells you maybe at Grambling, maybe they're going to do things a little differently in terms of when they get back together, because maybe the coach doesn't think and believe that his team needs to be back together until they are 200% confident that they can do everything in their power to mitigate the spread and all get together safely, you know what I'm saying, to get together for some workouts. And ultimately, you know, they got to get, in my opinion, these kids have to have at least 3 weeks of practice before you step out on the field, you know, and play a game. There's just, you got to give your body time to adjust. The strength coaches need their time to basically what I would call progressive overload these kids' bodies. You got to start light, get a little bit more progressive and try to work them up to peak for the first game of the season. But I think you need about 3 weeks to do that. So that's the only knowledge of specifically a school outside of the SWAC that I know about Southern. You know, Coach Fobbs has been very vocal, but outside of that, I couldn't tell you. I would just imagine that, you know, they're trying to do as much as they can and adhering to the same guidelines that everyone else is.
Okay, fair enough. And then, of course, head coach Broderick Fobbs at Grambling making that comment at Twitter, very open about that. And speaking of something that's been very open, the COVID-19 pandemic has also posed a lot of financial challenges. It's posed some financial challenges, not just in the Division I programs, but also with the HBCUs. Craig, you know that funding is very scarce and it's very sporadic when it comes to HBCUs. Do you have any insight on the financial hit that HBCUs, well, Southern in particular, could take in 2020, if there is no football, or even with this reduced, revised schedule that they have?
Yeah, I think the number that I saw, and I'd have to double check. I don't know if it was in terms of losing a season, but I'm about 95% sure when it was talking about the Tennessee State and FAMU game specifically. I think the number that I saw that they miss out on is $750,000. When it comes to playing those, you know, not playing those two games, right? So, you know, you sign these contracts to play the games, you get the money and all that type of stuff. But in this situation, if they're missing the games, they're going to miss out on like I said, the number I saw was $750,000. So, yeah, at an HBCU, you know, Division I FCS level, every dollar counts. You know, just since I've been covering Southern since 2016, they've always had to. They played Georgia in 2015. They played TCU in 2018. They played Memphis last year. So those big money games are very important to the lifeblood of, you know, I know it's a football game, but that money is for the whole athletic department. So that's for the bowling team. That's for the women's soccer team. That's for the softball team. That sort of money helps tremendously at a program with just, you know, not as many resources, not as big as network, not as big as, you know, in attendance in the stands and the TV contracts, you know, what that LSU gets and the bigger schools get. Just the Southern, you know, doesn't have, you know, that sort of money. So that was the number that I heard. And in terms of the overall season, I'd imagine it would be more than that. Maybe it's slightly more than that, but, you know, it's tough. It's going to be tough no matter which way you cut it. People are going to take losses. And we've already seen across the country, various schools cut programs entirely. I can't remember what school it was. Someone cut men's soccer. I don't know if it was Cincinnati or something like that. Someone cut men's soccer. There's been a few other schools that have cut programs just because, you know, they're not going to be able to afford it anymore. So it's the unfortunate, you know, reality of this situation. And Southern is not going to be able to prevent it. You know, obviously, if that's going to be the case, they're going to probably do everything in their power to hold on to it. But at the end of the day, when you're losing money, it's hard for everyone. So Southern's no different in that instance.
One last question regarding Southern. I've heard some information in regards to this year's Bayou Classic. It may not be in New Orleans this year, or it could possibly be canceled. What's the latest on the Bayou Classic? I know it's still early and it's still a fluid situation, but what have you heard in terms of possibly moving the Bayou Classic or maybe rescheduling? What's the latest on that?
Right. Right. Well, the official Bayou Classic committee put out a statement a few days ago, just saying, "Hey, no final decision has been made." They put out that statement in response to Roman Banks's Board of Supervisors meeting that was uploaded to YouTube, in which he clearly stated the Bayou Classic won't be in New Orleans this year, and then they're looking at the Independence Bowl or Independence Stadium in Shreveport. On the campus at Southern or at Tiger Stadium. So that's what he mentioned. But the Bayou Classic Committee itself has put out a statement saying nothing has been finalized. And then when it came to Southern releasing their schedule a couple days ago, the Bayou Classic location says TBD, to be determined. So that is up in the air. And, you know, who knows? I mean, it's like you said, it's fluid. You know, Superdome is going to be under heavy watch, you know, because the Saints, they need to play a, you know, preseason game here pretty soon too, and who knows what that's going to look like. And the Bayou Classic and all these events that have been canceled, you know, at the Superdome throughout the summer and throughout the fall, it's just not happening. So every day is a different situation, and the Bayou Classic is currently to be determined. If I had to bet, I would bet they're not going to play it in the Superdome, just because it's a huge place. They're, you know, they usually put, I think they were putting their 62,000 last year. That's not going to happen. Who knows? It's, if they can play it at a smaller stadium with just the, you know, the main people that they need, they don't really need a huge facility like the Superdome. So if they can play it at a smaller place, then maybe they will. But currently, it's to be determined.
Okay, fair enough. And speaking of to be determined, let's move ahead now to the 2020 LSU football season. LSU was riding a high earlier. LSU is riding a high right now. They're the defending national champs, led by, well, the quarterback, Joe Burrow, who's now playing who's expected to be playing in the NFL for the Cincinnati Bengals. Of course, Ed Orgeron won all sorts of awards, and that high-powered offense also had Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Jamar Chase, and also Justin Jefferson. I mean, that whole team was stacked in 2019 as they went on to beat Clemson in the national championship. But now, Craig, there's a weekend ago, there was an outbreak that was reported at Tigerland where at least 30 LSU football players have been quarantined while several players tested positive. I know this is still an ongoing situation. Of course, this was according to numbers that were brought up by the Louisiana Department of Health. I want to ask you, because you cover LSU football as well, what have you heard in terms of not just with the way the university has handled it, but how has Coach Orgeron and the rest of his coaching staff handled this situation with the players being quarantined and several players being testing positive due to the outbreak?
Well, from a university standpoint, this is kind of what we know. This is expected on their end. Okay, so they knew when they were going to get together back for workouts that there was going to be positive tests. Okay, now they're optimistic, and what they know is what they've been able to contact trace is none of the tests have come back from the workout facilities. Okay, what had happened with the LSU guys is, you know, some of the student athletes went out to Tigerland just because it's their first, as expected, right? You're in college, you know, we were all 20, 21 once and all that type of stuff. And it's their first weekend back with seeing their teammates in forever. There's also other people on campus that, you know, other students, you know, people around in Baton Rouge is a college town. There's a lot of younger, you know, people walking around. So everyone knows the student athletes are back on campus. Hey, let's all go to Tigerland. They all went to Tigerland because, you know, when you're young, you're not really – You see all the coronavirus stuff, but I think a lot of people, you know, they don't think it can affect them. They have the invincibility complex, and so they all go out and they got it within the community. So LSU's senior associate athletic trainer Shelley Molenix, you know, she explained, look, none of this has came from within the facility. Guys went out and got it in the community, and now those guys are being quarantined, so they're not going to bring it back in here, and we've been able to identify all the positive tests and all the people that have come in contact with the people that tested positive. So obviously, in terms of Coach O, yeah, he doesn't want his guys going out, and he doesn't want anyone getting sick either, but he is smart enough to realize, you know, he doesn't control this. He doesn't control the timeline. This isn't a practice. This isn't a
This isn't a workout routine. This isn't a schedule. He has no control over this. And ultimately, in college football, you know, when guys leave the facility, that's when coaches worry the most, and you can't protect them. You know, it's just, this is how it is. They're under your care and your watch a lot of the times, but these are 18, 19, 20-year-old men that are going to make their own decisions, and you can't control them 24 hours, 7 days a week. So when they go out, you know, they put themselves at risk, just like everyone does when you leave, you know, leave the house currently. And but the athletic department itself at LSU is basically saying, you know, they're going to be fine. They know how it happened. It hasn't come from within the facility. They tweeted out the strength and conditioning Twitter. They tweeted out a very extensive video of how they're cleaning the weight room and hydrogen peroxide bleach detergent based sort of routine that they put in spray guns, and they're wiping there. They spray it on all the bars and the weights and everything, and every place you can imagine, every nook and cranny in that weight room to help prevent, you know, possible spread of the virus. So they're going to take their precautions, and but ultimately, if kids are going to go out and step outside, then they can't protect them while they're out there.
Right, fair enough. That was a very interesting situation that happened. And again, for those that may not be familiar with Tigerland, as Craig mentioned earlier, Tigerland is an area in Baton Rouge where there's where a lot of college kids hang out at. There's different bars and different districts, just like on for college campuses. There's different campus districts. Yeah. And Tigerland is one of the many districts that they have in Baton Rouge. Let's stay with LSU for a moment. So we know about the current situation that happened with the outbreak in the Tigerland area and how it affected the football players. What about other athletes, other sports at LSU? We know that during the fall, football reigns supreme, but also you have LSU's also has a burgeoning and up-and-coming basketball program, and there's track and field, right. And there's, of course, gymnastics is very popular on the campus. Have other athletes have been tested, or has it just been primarily the football team?
Yeah, we have not received any news about other athletes. You know, and that's naturally, I think, a product of one thing, and that's because, you know, you got 120 guys on a football team. So the football team is going to be the most at risk in terms of, you know, because this will get the biggest numbers. You know, the basketball team is only, what, you know, 10 to 11 guys, you know, at this point, and then they'll bring in, you know, 3 to 4 freshmen come fall. So I don't know if we're going to ever really hear about the other schools. And when it comes to Baton Rouge, the city of Baton Rouge, LSU football is king. So anything that comes out media wise is going to be LSU football, because that's the moneymaker here. That's what people care about most. We'll wait and see. I mean, those other programs aren't, you know, they're not free of being at risk. So, you know, it could happen. If we hear about it, I'd imagine, you know, I'd imagine we would hear about it if it did happen, but all the attention is going to go to LSU. So those kind of other programs can probably float under the radar a little bit. You know, the basketball team, if, you know, if a positive test came out of the basketball team, that would probably make news. But anything else, who knows? We'd probably have to hear from the LSU officials. And I would say that's a little bit more unlikely, just because, you know, the other teams on campus are smaller, and, you know, the news doesn't travel as fast when it comes to the other programs.
Okay, well, fair enough. And speaking of news traveling fast, we know that not just with the COVID-19 pandemic, but also with a lot of news that has been traveling really fast is the social unrest in our country. And the New Orleans Saints, of course, Drew Brees, the future Hall of Fame quarterback, he came under fire for his comments about with the recent events happening with George Floyd, and of course with the particularly mm-hmm. with the kneeling of pertaining to Colin Kaepernick. There was a comment that he made a few years ago where he stated that kneeling during the national anthem was considered to be a disrespect to the flag, and he repeated his comments recently, and that caused a firestorm, not just amongst the NFL and in sports and in just in everyday society, but also amongst his teammates, the ones that he goes to war for on a day-to-day basis. So the 2020 Saints season, I mean, it's already been a firestorm already dealing with the pandemic, and then you're dealing now with not just social unrest, but with issues in America, racial issues. I want to ask you, I know you've been covering this diligently. From what you know, what have you heard in just in terms of what's the makeup like? Because I know there have been meetings with Drew, and he's apologized to his teammates. But what is the overall consensus of how the teammates are handling this situation? We know Michael Thomas has come out and said that he's forgiven him, Alvin Kamara, but Malcolm Jenkins, not so much. So what's kind of like, what have you heard from the Saints camp in terms of how they've handled the situation and just moving forward?
Yeah, well, if you know the Saints, I've been around the Saints since 2016, early 2016 season, and they have one of the best locker rooms in the NFL, okay, in terms of the leadership dynamics, the cornerstones with Sean Payton and Drew Brees, right? They have one of the best locker rooms in the NFL in terms of continuity, in terms of guys that like each other, respect each other. They all work hard for each other, right? And that's one of the certain locker rooms you hear, and there's just a lot of chaos and turmoil. The Saints have never been that way in the four seasons that I've covered them. So something like this, as unfortunate as it was, what Drew said, and you know, he kind of missed any – obviously he said it, he missed the point, he missed the mark on his comments, he didn't understand. Something like this has actually created a wave of awareness and positivity in that locker room that it wouldn't have otherwise. Okay, so I think the number one sign of great locker room leadership is the ability to deal with adversity, turn it into a positive, and learn from it. And that's exactly what the Saints have done, right? So they've had very productive conversations in terms of what happened. You know, why did Drew think it was about disrespecting the flag when it seems like everyone's been screaming at the top of their lungs, it's not about the flag, it's not about the flag. Okay, but why did Drew think it's about the flag? It's because, you know, he just – sometimes people are blind or can't think that, you know, they can't separate the two, the flag and the other issues that people see that the flag may represent. You know what I'm saying? So there was a very productive conversation. But the locker room itself, yes, Michael Thomas, you know, tweeted out his forgiveness. Alvin Kamara is still going to ride with Drew Brees. You know, Malcolm Jenkins is a guy that has been on the front lines of so many social injustice problems for a long time now. But, you know, they also, if you were to ask Malcolm if he still has respect for Drew Brees, of course he still has respect for Drew Brees. I mean, they won a Super Bowl together. They were teammates for 4 or 5 years together, Malcolm's first year through, I don't know, 2012. And so guys like that, Malcolm, you know, they might take a little bit longer, and maybe it does change his opinion of them. But at the end of the day, the locker room is, you know, there's a famous one of my favorite football movies of all time is Remember the Titans, and Denzel Washington says to these guys, he says, I don't care if you like each other, but you will respect each other, right? You don't have to like everyone that you're in the locker room with. I was a college football athlete at Oregon in 2009 and 2010. I didn't like every guy in the locker room. Put the pads on just like me. They went out to work and they did their thing. So you don't have to like everyone, but you got to respect everyone. And I'm sure, you know, Malcolm Jenkins has respect for Drew Brees, although he may think differently of him now. So the Saints are one of the stronger locker rooms, and this didn't, you know, create a permanent divide and insoluble divide. This is actually a benchmark in which they were able to move forward and educate, you know, maybe some of the white guys on the team that didn't really understand it and that have never had these, you know, tough conversations. So from everything that we can understand, the conversations have been positive, and the Saints have turned this, you know, slight controversy into a team building moment moving forward.
Yeah, let's hope that they move forward with this, and hopefully, like you said, it can continue to constructive dialogue that we have in our world right now with so much going on. So they've got that going on, Craig, and of course there's the pandemic. Now the NFL, Commissioner Goodell, they plan to move forward with their season. As far as we know, there won't this season is significant because due to the pandemic there won't be any off-season workouts, no OTAs, and we may not have preseason this year, but the regular season is still going to be business as usual is still planning to go on. So I want to know, recently the medical director for the NFL Players Association says that having group workouts is not a good idea. Now, we've seen several athletes. I've seen a video where there's Cam Newton and Odell Beckham Jr. They had a workout together. And, of course, Jarvis Landry has taken part in this as well. But now the NFLPA medical director says group workouts not a great idea. So I want to ask you, and again, I know this is a fluid situation, which we talked about earlier with Southern and LSU, but not just with the Saints, but the NFL in general. What are we looking like in terms of maybe September and October, and what are we looking like after October? Because there's a possible second wave and season may not finish. So kind of like, what's your take on with the NFL season going on as planned?
My take is the NFL is going to hold on to every hope of a season until the last possible second that they might have to make a change. So they are going to hold on to it. And look, the timing of this thing is actually in the NFL's benefit, right? You know, they played the Super Bowl first weekend and first Sunday in February. And that's kind of, you know, basically early March is when everything started kind of happening. So they've had a whole off season. They haven't had to change or shut down at all. This is just normal off season business. And, you know, the only thing that really changed this off season in terms of transactions was, you know, guys getting physicals from team doctors and working out at team facilities. You know, outside of that, you know, they can, the contract can be mailed, the contract can be printed out and signed, you know, stuff like that. But yeah, the NFL is going to hold on to every hope of a season until the very last second, right? No OTAs, okay, no problem. No preseason, okay, no problem. That if we don't, that gives us 3-4 more weeks to just hold out hope for a regular season. And you know, with all the resources that the NFL has, you know, best believe they're gonna be extensively testing everyone. You know, probably using some sort of, I'd imagine some sort of device like the NBA has in place with the ring around the wrist to possibly detect symptoms 3 days ahead of time. But they're going to hold on to every hope they can of the season. They're going to wait it out, and they're going to wait it out, and they're going to wait it out because there's a lot of money on the line. There would be a lot of upset NFL fans if they didn't play, although I think people would understand. But at the same time, you know, they don't want to cause any upheaval, any more upheaval in any regard to what's going on, you know, to add on top of what's going on right now in terms of social unrest, plus the pandemic. The last thing they want to do is act too premature and say, hey, you know, the first 3 games of the season are canceled. You know, they don't want to act too premature because they have a little bit more time. And obviously, I hate when people say time's on their side. Time is on no one's side. Time is not on anyone's side. Time is constantly moving. So you're getting closer and closer to a decision time. They're definitely going to hold on to every hope of a season that they can, and I expect them to not act too premature in any way, and they're planning to just move along business as usual until they're told that they absolutely can't, you know, possibly told that.
Let's stay with the NFL for a moment, Craig. Now, we know that the NBA for right now plans to resume their season, and they're going to be playing in the bubble in Florida, which has seen a major spike in coronavirus cases. Do you think the NFL will possibly entertain that idea of maybe playing in the bubble in Florida or maybe in another location? Or do you think, as you said, they'll go on with business as usual and play in the different NFL cities?
Yeah, that's a great question. Who knows? That's one I probably haven't even given as much thought to it as I should. I see them going to different cities, just because these guys are they're if you have two teams, and let's talk about the Saints. You know, the Saints practice facility is in Metairie. You know, they're in a bubble most of the time there anyway. You know, maybe even they do a team hotel where guys just go to and from the hotel and to the facility. That's it. So you got that, and then you got the Bucks, you know, who they open up the season with. If the Bucks are also in their own bubble in Tampa, you know, and everyone is no positive tests are coming back, and all the Bucks players are doing are going from the facility to the team hotel, and these two teams can link up on a field with no fans and play a game safely, in my opinion. But, you know, Dr. Fauci did say that a bubble a bubble atmosphere might be best, you know, for the NFL, you know. So if that's the case, then I'm sure they could do that. They definitely have the resources for it. And, you know, it would be easy for them because it would be a big change. But it logistically, they can work it out quicker than, you know, a smaller school or college school or a high school or something like that to play in their bubble. So if they do, I'm sure they will take every precaution. That will be interesting to see how it plays out. Only time will tell. But, you know, no fans, I think, is going to be the main thing that is going to be different about NFL games come the fall, which is going to be just a crazy thing to watch. So if they do end up playing in a bubble, you know, if Dr. Fauci says that's kind of the best route, then I'm sure they'll knock that out and move along with their season again, because money's on the line and TV contracts are important and, you know, the fans want to see the product. So time will tell.
Well, speaking of the product, Craig, let's get back to the Saints. We know Gail Benson is the owner of the New Orleans Saints, and we know there's a lot of money on the line, not just for the players, but more importantly for the owners, because with sponsorship deals and broadcasting revenue and things of that nature. In the event if they're in an empty Mercedes-Benz Superdome playing, the Saints are playing their games in an empty Mercedes-Benz Superdome in 2020, what is the financial impact that could be lost this year?
Yeah. I mean, a lot of money would be lost, right? I mean, no attendance and parking and all that type of stuff is a huge part of it. The NFL, I think, in that standpoint, is going to be just fine because the TV contracts are so big, right? And that, you know, every team gets their cut. The NFL gets their cut for these TV contracts. Now, attendance, you put 80,000, 90,000 people, you know, in the Superdome. That's a lot of money. You know, millions of dollars are generated on Sundays in New Orleans for the Saints, for local businesses. So not just the Saints and Gail Benson's pockets, but it's, you know, all the restaurants around there that are not going to be filled with as many people because people are going to stay home and just watch the game on TV. And, you know, I've been down to Poydras Street. I've been on Canal Street during Sundays, you know, after Saints games and before Saints games. And that economic impact, you can't understate that. So, you know, everyone's going to lose money if people aren't in the stands. but when you're an NFL owner, you're an NFL owner for a reason, and you found multiple ways to generate income and revenue for yourself. So I think the NFL owners will be just fine. Take a slight loss in the small picture, but in the big picture, I think overall they'll be okay. What I would be more concerned about is the locally owned restaurants in and around the New Orleans area that are typically packed on Sundays, you know, for Saints games, people that aren't inside the stadium that want to watch it and have a good time with friends and family and stuff like that. So that would be my primary concern. But no doubt, yeah, Gail Benson will definitely lose money if there's not fans in the stands.
Well, you said it earlier, Craig, time is definitely not on our side. And again, it's just a wait-and-see situation as this thing continues to evolve and it just remains fluid, and we just have to pay attention on that. So a lot going on in the world, not just in sports, but in society in general. But, Craig, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule. And if people want to connect with you on social media or any website that you may have, let them know that.
Yeah. Just follow me on Twitter. It's Craig Loper, SPX. Craig Loper, SPX. You spell my last name LOPER. So just give me a follow on Twitter to kind of talk, you know, sports, music, culture, comedy stuff. I'm not like a hardcore sports all the time person on my social medias. You know, I talk about other stuff that I find funny and music and things that I like. So go ahead and give me a follow on there, and I'm glad to chat and connect with anyone, man.
And you heard it from him. He's Craig Loper. He is the sports reporter and anchor for the CBS affiliate WAFB-TV in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. Craig, thank you so much for taking time out of your busy schedule to be with us on the program. If ever you want to come back on, please feel free to let us know.
Thanks, Ed, man. Have a good one.
All right, you too. And that's going to do it for another exciting edition of The Robinson Show. I'm your host, Ed Robinson. And remember, put God first in everything you do, and you can't go wrong. Until next time, stick to the script. I'm out, and remember, protect yourself, stay safe, and stay home. Peace.
People who are sick should stay home. You don't go to an emergency room. You don't go to a clinic. You get on the phone and you ask for advice and instructions from your physician. Then you use those instructions to determine what you're going to do. But the first reflex should not be, I feel sick, I'm going to go to an emergency room. I feel sick, I'm going to just go to a doctor's office. We need to physically separate. Ultimately, you may need, obviously, to see a physician or to go to a hospital. The first reflex should be to make a call to your physician.
There's no better place for a change of scenery than the white sand beaches of Gulf Shores and Orange Beach on Alabama's Gulf Coast. Our beaches are open, and our destination is ready to welcome you back to our shores. We've been hard at work preparing for your return. We've missed you and can't wait to see you again. Visit GulfShores.com and start planning your escape today. There's no better place for a change of scenery than the white sand beaches of Gulf Shores and Orange Beach on Alabama's Gulf Coast. Our beaches are open, and our destination is ready to welcome you back to our shores. We've been hard at work preparing for your return. We've missed you and can't wait to see you again. Visit GulfShores.com and start planning your escape today.
Yo, what's good? It's your boy CJ King. Look, and I'm rocking with the homie Rick Sincere. I'm going to need y'all to keep it locked right here on MTMV Sports.